following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, September 10th, 2018.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
What a beautiful day here in Sonoma County and at KBBF 89.1 FM. I have two special guests in the studio with me, Megan Kahn, who is the board of who's on the board of directors for the Sonoma County Conservation Action and leads the Toxic Free Future campaign. And also with her is Nicole Warwick, who's the co-founder and executive director of Families Advocating for Chemical and Toxic Safety. It's called FACTS, F-A-C-T-S. And I'm really excited also about my next guest. Is also joining me on the phone is Osprey Oriole Lake, who is the founder and executive director of the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, We Can International, and we'll be talking about the Global Climate Action Summit and their participation, and also about the march that happened in San Francisco. As most of, I hope most of you are listening to Democracy Now! Before the show, and she announced that they counted 30,000 people that showed up in San Francisco for that march. That's a pretty good show out, I would say. And one of the thing about, I found that the We Can movement, I want to read this. It's really interesting because right now, I personally believe that what is happening, that women are on the movement. And here we have this wonderful organization called We Can. And I want to read a statement that was made by a woman by the name of, I hope I pronounce her name right, Professor Wangari Maharati. She was a Nobel Peace Prize laureate. And what she said about women, we are living on the front lines of climate change and are ready to be active partners in dealing with climate change. If the international community is serious about addressing climate change, it must recognize women as fundamental part of the climate solution. Well, of course we're the intimate part of the climate solution. We bring forward the children. We know what we need in our universe to, in order to produce and not only to do that, but to raise healthy, vibrant children that are able to make a difference in this world. Well, I have a few announcements. First of all, happy birthday, Santa Rosa, 150 years strong. And, man, we really know how to give a party. I couldn't believe the size of the cake. It was almost as tall as I am. I'm only 5'3". And it was amazing seeing all the people gathering and all the different people coming out in the community, letting us know all the different services. And it was, to me, it was also so diverse. It was amazing what a diverse community that we have, and I want to do a shout out for Ken and his Tai Chi group, and for the Redwood Chinese Association. They did a great display on how to do Tai Chi, and all the vendors that came out. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And once again, happy, happy birthday, Santa Rosa, 150 years strong. And remember, folks, I also write for the Sonoma County Gazette, and I write Santa Rosa snippets. So anything in Santa Rosa going on, make sure that you email me at elaine@womenspaces.com with any suggestions. Well, I do have two important, what I think are important announcements. First of all, what's happening is there's going to be an annual picnic and community outreach on Saturday, September 15th from noon to 6 p.m., and that's going to be put on by the Petaluma Blacks and Faith Ross and Gloria Robinson. A shout-out to them for organizing this. You'll be sharing meals, talking, and playing, and a good way to get to know your neighbors. Everybody is invited. It's going to be at McNair Park. Park, 11th Street and G in Petaluma, and like I said, is sponsored by Petaluma Sonoma Blacks for community development. And I think this is one of their first events that they've had in a long time of this size. And I love their theme. The beauty of the world lies in the diversity of its people. Isn't that beautiful? The beauty of the world lies in the diversity of its people. And then there's another important thing coming up that's being put on by the Sonoma County Black Forum and Sonoma State Black Student Union, and it's the 2018 Youth Summit that's happening September 22nd from 8 to 5 p.m., grades 9 to 12. Oh, my goodness. Just think, things are changing. I mean, at one time, did we even consider our youth? Now we're having youth summits, we're educating them, we're trying to get them together, and we're looking at what they need to be more, say, a little bit more progressive and more, think a little bit more about what's going on in the culture they're around. So that's going to be on September 2nd, grades 9 through 12. It's going to be at Sonoma State University Student Center in Rohnert Park. Topics include leadership, education, technology, and entrepreneurship, and more. So I really encourage, if you have a child between the age of 9 or grandchild or whatever, in the grades 9 to 12, you might check that out. Well, folks, it happened. It actually happened. I'm a great grandmother. Can you believe that? A great grandmother. You know, I like to joke and say, you know, I always thought I was great and finally they're going to put it in my name. But no, I'm a great grandmother to a beautiful baby girl, Satori Trinity Jensen. What a name. You know, Satori means enlightened one. And I'll tell you something. I could not believe this baby, how beautiful she was. Of course, I'm a little bit biased, but even with that attitude, I looked at this child and here was this perfect being. And I start thinking of what her mother went, my granddaughter Amber went through to give birth. And then here she's holding this baby as if she didn't even go through it. I mean, it was just amazing to me. Well, she was born, and Satori Trinity Jensen was born, like I said, September 6, 2018, weighing in at 7 pounds, 11 ounces. And the parents are my grandchildren, Ryan and Amber Jensen. What a thrill it was to me when I heard her first cry. You know, it's kind of interesting. We couldn't actually be in the room, so I was with my own granddaughter, Katie, and my sister, Evelyn, and we were by a wall on the other side of the room, and we had our ears to the wall. And at 3:03, we heard that first cry. And the experience showed me once again the miracle of life and how life comes into the world. You know, I couldn't help but think that this has been going on from the beginning of time. I mean, where else did we come from if not from a woman's body? You know, and the labor. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I have never seen a birth to the end. When my granddaughter Amber gave a push, it felt like she was just pushing through the universe. I mean, it was amazing just to hear that. And I watched and anticipated the process of birth, and I couldn't help but think, what a miracle this is. And I couldn't help but flash all of a sudden to the border. Can you imagine someone pulling that precious miracle away from you? I mean, it just gave me the chills. You know, I was trying not to think of negative things because I'm in this really kind of enlightened state. But at the same time, I can't help but realize there are many, many, many children out there that do not experience what little Satori experienced. And then we're going to talk about climate change. Look at what's going on across the globe. I can't imagine what it must be like to just give birth to a child and suddenly find yourself as a refugee. You know, trying to get to another country, trying to escape, you know, maybe a war. I mean, all these things came to my mind. And at the same time, I had to look at this blessing that I was being given by this beautiful, beautiful great-grandchild. And another reminder that the children are our future, and we must do everything we can to assure that they have a good future. You know, as I get older, and as I, you know, first of all, becoming a mother, that was a big deal. But becoming a grandmother was, oy, 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 that's a Jewish word, oy vey. I mean, I couldn't even face it. I said, oh, my God, does this mean I'm really over the hill? And now to become a great-grandmother, you know, and as I go through each process and each you know, each kind of level, you know, mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, I begin to see more and more the preciousness and the mystery surrounding life and how we create it. And we have to really start coming together as women, as mothers, as those who bring forward the future and say, enough is enough, it's got to stop. And you know, it's so simple. Let's just take a time out and reverse course. I mean, it's amazing. Well, anyway, that's a lot to think about. I am very emotional about this. Ken is now a great-grandfather. I can't wait to see what she calls us. And a special shout-out to my beautiful, beautiful daughter, Susan, who... Thank you, Susan, for coming into my life. I mean, you have been my motivation forever and ever. And also to my beautiful grandchildren, and also to Katie Jensen. It was so much fun, Katie, was standing behind that door together. And, of course, to my beautiful sister, Evelyn Holtz. My sister and I are 5 years apart. I'm the oldest one. And as we get older, we get closer. So it was really a wonderful experience. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and I'm going to play a very, very special song. It's called Forever Young, and it was written by Bob Dylan. And it's sung by an arrangement by Andrea May and the Forest Rangers. it's on an album called Anarchy, Sons of Anarchy. So it's amazing, an amazing song. It's called Forever Young. And Bob Dylan wrote this song for his firstborn, Jesse Dylan, and it was written in 1966. And I remember when I first heard it. I remember playing it when my grandchildren were born. And I also remember thinking about it and wondering, what a beautiful song. What does it really mean? And it's just a wish. And I wish this for all the children of the world. But the beauty of the song is that he did write it for his own child. And the challenge for me is when I love these songs to find, because, you know, this is women's spaces. I want to make sure we have women singing, to find women singing it. So here we go, Forever Young, written by Bob Dylan and sung by Andrea May and the Forest Rangers. And when we return, I will be talking with Megan Kahn, who is the board of who's on the board of directors for Sonoma County Conservation Action and leads the Toxic Future campaign, and Nicole Warwick, who is the co-founder and executive director of Families Advocating for Chemical and Toxic Safety Facts.
God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung. And may you stay forever young. Stay forever young. May you grow up to be righteous. May
Oh, my goodness, what a song. You know, I was thinking about what I was thinking while I was listening to it is we must never forget to see the beauty of a child's newborn cry or the first flower of the spring. You know, there's so much beauty going on in the world, even though in spite of some of the challenges and some of the things that we have to face, to remember that. Anyway, for you folks just joining in, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my two guests. Welcome, Nicole Warwick and Megan Kahn. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you, Elaine. We're happy to be here.
I know. What an emotional morning. I mean, it's so amazing to be talking about birth and then also talking about the climate and some of the things that we need to get involved. I'd like to tell our listeners just a little bit about you before we begin. Is that okay? Well, Megan Kahn, will start with you. She has a master's degree in environmental fluid mechanics and hydrology from Stanford University. By the way, Ken is also a graduate of Stanford University, and a BS in environmental engineering from Northwestern University. She serves on the board of directors for Sonoma County Conservation Action and leads the Toxic Free Future campaign. She is a consulting engineer and actually was previously vice chair of the Santa Rosa Board of Public Utilities and worked for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for nearly 10 years. She is the mother of two, so you can understand what I was talking about this morning, who became involved in toxic free advocacy and policy change in an effort to protect her children. You know, and even she's protecting her children, what she's really doing is protecting all children, and that, I believe, is the goal of every mother in public spaces. Well, welcome. And then we have Nicole Warwick. Nicole, welcome. She has a master's degree in psychology from Saybrook University and also a BA in history from Sonoma State University. That's my alma mater there. She is co-founder and executive director of Families Advocating for Chemical and Toxic Safety Facts and Environmental Health Program Manager for Daily Acts. She serves as secretary on the board of directors for, I guess, the CERES, Sears Community Project. Do you work with Carolyn Bonsuelo?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. She's one of my favorite people. She is also a breast cancer survivor, mother of two, grandmother. My goodness, that is amazing. And anything else you'd like to say about yourself? Anything you want to add to what we've said?
Oh, thank you. Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you on the birth of your great-granddaughter. That's so fantastic. And I'm really moved by what you're saying about protecting are young, and we protect what we love. And I think that's what's brought Megan and I here today, is because we sincerely love and want to protect the children in our community.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's so important that we hear that, that we are the protectors, and we're also the stewards of the land. You know, people talk and call themselves Christians. Go to the Bible. It says we are stewards of the land. It doesn't mean we're supposed to destroy it. We're supposed to enhance it and multiply. So it's very, thank you for saying that. Well, you know, let's start with you, Megan, because I want to find out a little bit more about the Sonoma County Conservation Action Group, some of their goals, and how you got involved.
Sure. So Sonoma County Conservation Action has been around for about 28 years. It was founded by Bill Cordham. We have about 10,000 members in Sonoma County, and it's the nonpartisan political arm of Sonoma County's environmental movement. So I think what we do is pretty important. Our current work is focused on ensuring a just and sustainable rebuild after last October's firestorm, working to remove toxins from our public areas, promoting city-centered growth and transit corridors, ensuring that Sonoma County remains a leader in climate protection policy, and electing strong environmental champions to office. So I'm involved primarily, through running the Toxic Free Future campaign. We're trying to get toxic chemicals, primarily synthetic pesticides, out of all public spaces in Sonoma County, schools and parks. But, you know, we do a lot of other things also to keep our county safe and environmentally well.
Well, you know, it's very, very interesting because I noticed that you do put a lot of focus on children and their spaces with the schools and the parks. And I mean, I know when we go to the park, we don't even let our dog go near trees because we know that it's been sprayed. Well, why don't you talk, Nicole, a little bit about how you got involved and also talk a little bit about Daily Acts. I've always been curious about them. I know nothing about them. I always think it's maybe a positive saying every day. But what is Daily Acts?
I think it is a positive saying. It's an affirmation. But Daily Acts is a sustainability nonprofit here in Sonoma County, and our vision is a healthy, just, and irreverent culture. So I work with Daily Acts. I manage the environmental health program in addition to working with FACS. So with Daily Acts, our mission really is to transform communities through education and inspired action to help cultivate and build leadership and local self-reliance. And we do this through our various program offerings. They include water conservation, civic programs, our Community Resilient Challenge, our homegrown programs where people learn about soil health, natural landscaping, foodscapes, homesteading skills, things that we used to know but tend to be lost in our modern-day culture. And then we have our two newest programs, the Leadership Institute, which is a 10-month cohort program, which teaches a variety of skills that local leaders would need to know to be able to engage in sustainable leadership, including climate change, social and environmental health, water, agriculture, housing, land use, diversified economies, and the like. Our newest program is the Environmental Health Program, which addresses Sonoma County's need for an environmental health hub of resources and information. So we're seeking to build a network of partners and collaborators to build more opportunities for our community to become educated and involved in our environmental health.
Yeah, I'd like to talk a little bit about that last part that you said a little bit later in the program. You know, when you're talking about a toxic-free future, it's very, very interesting. I know here in Sonoma County, we just outlawed Roundup on some levels, or maybe you can explain that a little bit.
Sure. So just to back up a little bit, I got involved in this work in 2015. At the time, I was taking some time off from work. I was hanging out with two small kids, and I was going to the park a lot. And that's where we played. That was our lawn. That was where we met friends. It was a very important part of our lives. And one day, I found out that our Recreation and Parks Department was going to do a large application of Roundup, so based on glyphosate, which we know is a probable human carcinogen, right next to where the kids play. And it didn't feel right to me. So I negotiated with the department, along with the two neighboring schools and a bunch of neighbors, to allow us, the neighbors, to manage the land organically by hand-pulling weeds. And that experience was really empowering to me, and it was also a wake-up call.
Well, wait a minute. So you got your neighbors together, and because you were so concerned about this, that you volunteered to actually go and pull weeds rather than harm the children.
Right. I mean, at the time,
that
was really our only option. You know, I called the department. I tried to get them to do something else. At the time, I wasn't really educated on alternatives like I am now. And so I didn't
nothing like an educated mom.
Yeah, right. Well, nothing like a mad mom, right? So that was the only option I had, and I had to do something quick because they were going to spray the next day. And so I rallied the neighbors. We got 25 people to show up the weekend before Thanksgiving, and we pulled two truckloads of weeds at the park.
Oh, my goodness.
And we showed them that it was important to us to keep our park toxic-free. So after this experience, of course, my eyes were opened, and I had to check my kids' schools. So they were at a Santa Rosa City School. And, of course, they were spraying there, too. And they were actually spraying a product that was worse than what was being used in the Santa Rosa City Park. And so then I had to ask the principal to stop spraying at our school. And at this point, you know, it just snowballed. I realized that nearly every school and park in Sonoma County in 2015 relied on glyphosate-based herbicides like Roundup to manage weeds. So just for beautification, not for public safety, not for health. It was just to keep the spaces looking nice. And to me, I didn't think that our kids' health should be put in jeopardy for spaces to look perfect. Mm-hmm. So I started to find my voice and to speak out about that in our county.
Well, how did you, one of the things, this is women's spaces, and And one of the goals that I have that's very strong is to get women to stand up and speak. You know, I notice even on the talk shows, you'll have a lot of men calling and very few women. You know, it's very hard for us to get our voice. So where did you get your confidence? I mean, besides your children, I mean, and you were a mad mom, but you still had to overcome a hurdle. You still had to recognize that you had a right to speak out. What do you think sparked that for you?
Well, it was a long process and it took a while. I mean, the first few years I felt really alone. And Nicole and I have talked about this, and you know, when you get the calling to do something, sometimes you haven't found your people yet. And so it took me a few years to find the people to work with to try to amplify our voices together. And really finding SCCA a year ago when I joined them and their volunteer team and formed Toxic Free Future was when I found my people. So for 2 years, I kind of by myself called people, had meetings. You know, I was fortunate I was on the Board of Public Utilities, and so I was able to work with Santa Rosa Water to successfully get rid of all synthetic pesticides on their lands. And so that was like a kind of a first win to make me feel like this was, you know, important, but it was difficult.
How did you two get together, and how do you support one another in this action?
Oh, I had learned about Megan. I think Megan learned about my work. And then as soon as we shared stories, I think there's something really powerful about women gathering and sharing stories. Because in our storytelling, we learned we had so much in common that we were both working towards the same pathway.
Well, you survived. You were a cancer survivor. So you understand toxicity probably to the core of your bones.
I did. I fell down the rabbit hole of toxic research after I was diagnosed. So 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And at that point, my oncologist had informed me that it was most likely environmentally derived. And that blew my mind because I had lived this very healthy lifestyle. I was engaged in environmental health work. It just didn't seem congruent until I started to do the research and understand what we're really exposed to on a daily basis, and then what we're exposed to living in an agricultural community. And I'll admit, at first, it was really difficult to sit with that information. I had a trauma reaction to it. In truth, it was difficult for me to go to the parks. I remember reading my son's handbook. You know, it's back to school time. They send home the handbooks, and in the handbooks, they disclose what pesticides they spray on campus. And when I read that they were spraying where my child went to school, I knew I had to do something. I had to step in. And so that kind of began the ball rolling for me, too, and then finding other allies and building this movement and working together has been one tremendously comforting and reassuring, because it is a lonely sort of process.
But also, you know, I have to point this out, that you're both mothers. You know, there's something about giving birth and giving charge to this innocent entity that comes to us for care and protection. You know, and then you yourself suffering from, you know, something that you know is from the environment. I mean, my God, 1 in 3 women getting cancer now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's almost scary. And finding that Sonoma County itself has one of the highest rates of children cancer. And I'm going, what?
This is true.
You know, I went to a store about 6 months ago, and there it was, you know, this pesticide right up front on sale. I made such a stink about it. I mean, at least I got it to the back of the room, but I didn't get rid of it. You know, I knew when Ken and I walked out, we said, you know, no matter what we do, it's still. And then you watch people walking in and buying it. And I asked this one gentleman, he says, oh, hi, how you doing? I said, I'm just curious, do you use this stuff? He says, oh, yeah, I've been using it for years. I said, well, what do you, he says, for your lawn. I says, oh, really? He says, yeah, I can't stand those damn daffodils or dandelion. Mm-hmm. And people don't even know that dandelion is one of the greatest herbs for the liver. You know,
exactly.
Here we kill it with pesticides. So it really touches me that the fact that you're both mothers and that you're so committed. And I encourage all your mothers out there to get involved. And one of the things that I try to mention all the time, maybe physically you can't get involved, but find out these organizations and support them with your checkbook. Do something. If you can't walk with your feet, walk with your hands across your whatever you can, if you can make a donation. Well, are there any things coming up or any particular things that you'd like to share? You know, we're almost coming to the end of the segment, and things go pretty quickly. There's lots of information. And also, what would you like to cover the next aspect?
Well, I'd like to end this on a positive note, I'd like to say that after all of our hard work, we've had a few major wins this year. So Santa Rosa City Schools banned all synthetic pesticides in January 2018.
Wait. So they actually banned it in the school?
Santa Rosa City Schools in January. And then August 21st this year, the city of Santa Rosa banned all synthetic pesticides. And then again last week, September 5th, Windsor, the town of Windsor, banned all synthetic pesticides. So all this hard work that we've been doing is really paying off right now. There's a lot of momentum on this movement, and please come reach out to us if you want to get involved and sponsor your school or city to go toxic-free.
Let me just ask you a question. You know, we do live in a city. Any particular council person or person that really supported and went to the wall for you on this that you'd like to do a shout out? Because, you know, oftentimes there's so much negativity about our politicians. It's nice to know which one did something, which one was supported.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Town of Windsor, Deb Fudge, she's the one who championed this since, you know, we started with her about a year ago. And then City of Santa Rosa, we had four supporters, big supporters on council. So Mayor Chris Quercy, Chris Ross, Rogers, Jack Tibbetts, and Julie Combs all strongly supported this move. So it was really great when we saw it happen.
Well, thank you. I want to thank all those city councils. It's so important that we acknowledge. We, you know, oftentimes we're so negative with people that I think they kind of shy away from us. But if we give a little praise every once in a while, I think it does a lot of good. So tell us, is there anything new coming up, any events that you have or anything that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think one of the most important things that I'd like to take this time to address is that it's very important for parents to become informed of what your children are exposed to on a daily basis. And there are lots of different ways that we can do that. So in my work, I'm looking at all the places where children live, learn, and play. So if families wanted to become informed about ways that they could create a more toxic-free home environment, I would encourage them to go to FamilyActs, FamilyACTS.org, and there they can find a checklist, list of resources, scientific evidence-based research on toxics exposures and ways to eliminate toxics exposures in your home environment.
You know, I want to say something here, too. Oftentimes people say, I don't have time. I don't have time to do all that. I don't have time to look at my health. Well, you know, folks, if God forbid your child gets sick, all of a sudden you got all kinds of time to spend with them and not be at work and all those other things. So find time to do this stuff. So continue.
Thank you. It really does make a difference. And if we think about it, it doesn't take a lot of effort. A simple thing, just removing your shoes before you go into your home environment, makes a huge impact into what we're tracking in and out of our homes. Right? And then we think about how children learn and explore and develop. They're crawling all over everything. They're touching things. They're putting things in their mouth. That's how they process and learn. And that's right. Only it's our job to make sure that those environments in which they're doing all of these natural discovery processes are safe and toxic free.
Very, very, very good. And that's simple. Just go through and start reading labels.
Yes.
And another suggestion I have, if you go into any of your gardening shops and you see them putting stuff out front, you know, maybe talk to them. Say, do you know this is hurting the virus? Or I would say the first question I would ask, are you a parent? You know, I mean, because you've got to, I don't care if you're an uncle, an aunt, a parent. I mean, is any involvement that you have with children, you should be concerned, but you should also be concerned for yourself. When you're hearing that 1 in 3 women are having cancer, right, you have to ask yourself, what is going on? When I was born in 1940, if you ever heard of a woman having a breast cancer, it was very, very unusual. Mm-hmm. Very unusual. And now you hear it all the time. You hear it all the time. Well, any events coming up? And let's hear your websites and anything else that you'd like to share.
Yeah, I'd invite people to come visit our website at conservationaction.org and then /toxic-free to learn more information about what we're up to. We have a toolkit that'll help you step-by-step learn how to help your school or town become toxic-free. And we also have information on agricultural pesticide use within a quarter mile of all schools in Sonoma County. So check it out.
Well, you know, I'd like you to give me that because we would be very happy to post that on our website, Women's Spaces. Go ahead, my friend.
Thank you very much. I'd like to mention a collaboration that Daily Acts is doing in partnership with Corazón Farmacopia from the ground up, and Sanación del Pueblo. On November 17th at Corazón in Healdsburg, we'll be leading an environmental health workshop in Spanish, helping local residents identify toxicants, reduce exposure, gain indigenous knowledge of herbs and foods that naturally detoxify and build immunity in the bodies. I would also like to pitch that through Daily Acts, we are starting a North Bay Environmental Health Network, and we're putting out the call for people who are interested in this. Either you're a local citizen involved in this, or you work with an organization that does something that's involved in the many facets that comprise our environmental health. We're stronger when we come together. When we gather and we have one unified voice, we can really make a great impact and a difference in our community.
Now, are you going to looking for volunteers to work with you in this program? Or
yes,
are you looking a board or any of that?
Yes. Since we're still in the development phase, we're looking for people to address both tier structures. One would be the organizational tier, where we're having leaders from local nonprofits and local government who would serve on a council. And then the second tier would be all citizens who would support but maybe aren't necessarily tied into an affiliation but do have a voice. We want everyone here. You mentioned earlier about how did we find our voice. I think we all have a voice, and it takes that one catalyzing thing in our lives to make us actualize it, to give it power, to stand up and to speak out. And we want to create a forum where people have a voice in our community to speak out about the things that impact our health, the things that are going on in our environment that we know we could do better.
Well, I'll tell you, Megan and Nicole, you definitely inspired me. So let's give our websites one more time. Go ahead, Megan, you give your website first.
So it's conservationaction.org/toxicfree.
And FACTS is FamilyACTS.org and also DailyActs.org.
Well, thank you both for being on Women's Spaces. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here and also for all the work you do. So we're going to take a musical break right now, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Osprey Oreo Lake, who's the founder and executive director of the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. The song we're going to play is We Are Here, sung by Sharon Burt.
Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me, hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Surroundings to be Anila Nijam Nego Shabotya
Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my next guest. Joining me on the phone is Osprey Oriole Lake. Welcome, Osprey. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, this was so wonderful that, you know, thank you so much for to thank Emily for organizing all this. And I can't believe how quickly time goes by here. Osprey, I'd like to tell our listeners a little bit about you. Is that okay?
Sure.
She is the Osprey Oriole Lake is the founder and executive director of the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, We Can International. She works nationally and internationally with grassroots and indigenous leaders, policymakers, and scientists to promote climate justice, resilient communities, and a just transition to a clean energy future. Well, welcome. You're also the co-director of the Divest, Invest, Protect campaign and oversees We Can advocacy work in the areas such as Women for Forests, Rights of Nature, and UN Forums. She is the author of the award-winning book, Uprising for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature. Well, welcome from the bottom of my heart to this program.
Oh, thank you.
Osprey, talk about the Women's Earth and Climate Network, We Can International, and your motivation for finding the organization and some of the challenges that you've been facing.
I started the organization to really uplift the stories of frontline and grassroots and indigenous women in who are really on the front lines of climate change. We've learned through a lot of our studies, but also studies around the world, that women are impacted first and worst by climate change. A lot of that has to do with their rights being denied and gender inequity in cultures all over the world. And at the same time, we've learned that there is really no pathway to sustainability and to really get us out of this climate crisis and environmental degradation without women's leadership and women's solutions. So people are welcome to go to our website to look at the more statistical information that we've collected about why women are central to the climate change conversation and why it's so important that we see them in leadership roles, that we really lift up the solutions that they're already participating in and ensure that they're at the decision-making table. So it's one of the reasons we started this organization is to ensure that we had a platform where women could share the work that they're doing, advocate together, work collectively, and we've been very, very excited to do this. And our struggle is that, you know, it continues to be that, you know, even in the media, about 15% of the stories that are told about climate change are with women, only 15%. And we really need to change that narrative since they're so central to solutions. So this is a time of women rising all the way from Alaska to the Amazon, from India to the Maldives Islands. We're working with women in all these regions, and they're doing phenomenal work. We want to make sure that people learn about it and that we can participate in programs to support that work.
Well, you know, right now, women are moving. It just feels like there's a new women's movement happening. Can you tell me what it is? What do you believe? What is your thought is why it's so important that women become involved? And why do you feel it's their moment in history right now?
Well, we've been dealing with these systems of oppression for a very long time. Institutionalized patriarchy, racism, capitalism, colonization, they are all connected, these same systems that oppress and are really uniting our movements at this time. And a big part of it is that we have seen this dominator worldview really run its course to this very dangerous end game that we're in now. And with this dominator worldview, we're seeing, you know, the oppression of women, people of color, indigenous people, and the land. And we really need to move into a different model. And I think that women have a great deal to offer in terms of how we work collectively. We know that, as an example, 60 to 80% of all household food production in developing countries is done by women. So if you don't involve women in these programs, we're not going to see food security. We're not going to see food sovereignty at this very critical time of climate change. These are true also of water programs, of involving women in these programs because they have the water knowledge. They've been collecting the water. So I think that at so many practical levels, women have been on the front lines working the land, working with their families, working on local communities. Women have the social capital to do a lot of work at the local level, and we know, again, through many studies, that most of the solutions need to become more localized. So I think all of these things contribute to women's voices and women's actions being critical at this time. And the last thing I'll say is I also think that there's another component that is not marked as easily, and that is emotional and spiritual intelligence that women are carrying that really moves the dial in terms of their leadership, what they're bringing to the table, how they convey their message. And I think this is also really central to this time. A lot of our Indigenous women allies are saying over and over again that we need to reconnect with the land, connect with Mother Earth, and that part of the solution is really struggling to change with the fact that so many people in our modern societies are disconnected from the natural world and therefore don't care for their waters, for their air, for the plants, for the animals. And that narrative really also needs to change in that experience for humans. And I think that a lot of women are speaking out more about our connection to the land and to Mother Earth and how that's part of the solution.
Well, you know, it's real interesting when you say women have, they bring to the table the emotional and the spiritual. I just became a great grandmother, and I'm telling you, the emotions and the spirituality around birth and around seeing life come in and what it takes was an amazing impact on me. And I can see right now the importance of women coming together, standing up for the future of the children that we are bringing forward. Whether you're a mother or a grandmother or whatever, the fact that you're a woman, this is what is in your body, the emotion and the spiritual thing around life. So I think I really appreciate you saying that. And one thing that in reading all your information, I found out that you have organized a group called the Women's Assembly. And I guess that's going to be part of the Climate Action Summit that's happening starting this Wednesday in San Francisco. Can you talk a little bit about the Assembly and what you see its importance?
Sure. Well, I think just to contextualize, this week in San Francisco, Governor Jerry Brown has called the Global Climate Action Summit, or we were calling it the GCAS, the Global Climate Action Summit, where there'll be elected officials coming from all over the world. There'll be business leaders and some civil society coming to meet to talk about climate change and further the goals of the Paris Climate Accord. Obviously, governments are not working fast enough, or in our opinion, with a climate justice framework to really resolve the climate crisis at the level that we now see that we need to operate at. And so this meeting is being called simultaneously in parallel to that. There's many grassroots groups, civil society groups in San Francisco right now carrying on a host of activities, events all week to share community-led solutions, not market-based solutions, but really what are communities wanting for how they're going to want their energy, their food production, how they want their lands and forests cared for. In fact, right now I'm calling you from the streets of San Francisco. I've been in a protest all this morning around protecting Indigenous people's forests from a lot of these carbon trading schemes. So in that context, we're holding the Women's Assembly for Climate Justice on September 11th in the Green Room in San Francisco across from City Hall. And we're very excited. There's going to be over 30 women speaking from countries around the world, some policymakers. There'll be women talking about agroecology, democracy. They'll be talking about water issues. They'll be talking about climate change resistance programs, women and girls' education around climate change, a variety of things. And we're really excited to be having all these women collect together from 1 to 8:30 tomorrow to talk about the issues in their regions as well as the solutions that they're offering. So I think it's going to be really uplifting. We're also going to be releasing a document tomorrow about the demands and calls to action from Women for Climate Justice, because when we talk about solutions, it's really important to sort of define what we mean. And when we're talking about climate justice, we're talking about ensuring that frontline communities, those impacted first and worst, are part of the discussion of solutions and not left out, so that we don't have, you know, so-called sacrifice zones where solutions from the top down often leave out people of color, marginalized people, and we don't think that they should be sacrificed in this transition to renewable energy, or that things move in a way that don't allow those frontline communities to have a safe, healthy future as well.
Wow. I mean, so much. I mean, I wish I could be a fly on the wall. I mean, that just sounds like absolutely marvelous. You know, can you give some examples of what folks are calling for? You mean maybe one or two?
Sure, and I just want to mention the event will be live streamed on our WeCan Facebook site, so anyone who is not able to come, you're welcome to join us by joining us on Facebook Live tomorrow starting at 1.
What would it be?
Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, Women's Earth and Climate Action Network International Facebook page.
Oh my goodness, so we can actually see the conversation. I mean,
sure.
I think one of the things that we need to really look at when we start talking about this stuff is what a blessing it is that we have this communication, this ability to instantly let each other know what's going on. I mean, I think this is really interesting. Talk about, you know, what your desired impact is. You know, what do you hope that the Women's Assembly is going to walk away with at this conference?
Well, I think it's really important that, one, we collect our power together and network with women from around the world. We are stronger when we network together, learn about each other's work, and help amplify each other's efforts. So that's one component. Another is, as I say, we're going to be delivering to the Global Climate Action Summit, to the formal meeting, our call of demands. And so we will be discussing that tomorrow. We will be talking about women's rights and the role of women's rights to climate change solutions and how important it is, for all the reasons I was mentioning earlier, that women are empowered, that women are at the table. We will be talking about indigenous rights, about 80% of all the biodiversity left on the earth right now is in the lands and hands of indigenous people. So we really need to be standing up for indigenous rights as well, and that they are ensured free, prior, and informed consent before anything happens on their territories. We'll be talking about rights of nature, which is a new form of a new earth jurisprudence, a new framework where we stop treating nature as property, but as a rights-bearing entity where rivers and mountains and oceans have rights to be healthy. The climate has a right to be healthy. Right now, our legal structures do not allow nature to have a place in the court of law. It only is there as if it's human property to be owned and used. And we really are in a dangerous situation now where we need to quit viewing Mother Earth as a commodity. Our earth is not for sale. Our waters are not for sale. The air is not for sale. Our trees are not for sale. We need to really move out of this sort of commodification of nature into living in harmony and beauty with Mother Earth.
Well, you know, I got to tell you something. You give me such hope, you know, and just listening to what you're doing and what you're outlining and what you're hoping for, you know, is just amazing. And the next question I have for you is what can interested women around the world do to support the work of WeCan and to support all the things that are going on right now? And also give us your website and any future events.
Sure, great. Well, everyone's welcome to join us tomorrow, as we mentioned on the web, the live stream. And our website is www.wecan, WECAN, and then the word international, fully spelled out, .org, wecaninternational.org. And people can go there and sign up for our newsletter. There are blogs there. There's a wonderful a launch that we've put out just at the end of last year called Women Speak, of this wonderful online storytelling database that has literally hundreds and hundreds of stories in 15 different categories about what women are doing and their leadership around climate change. So it's a really great resource. And then usually at the beginning of every year, we host online trainings, and anyone can participate in those online trainings for free. And once you're on our newsletter, you know, you'll get alerts as to when these trainings come up, and people are welcome to participate that way as well.
Well, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, Osprey Oreo Lake, who is the founder and executive director of the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, WeCan International. Thank you so much for being such a wonderful guest and for giving us such great information. Any last quick words?
Just it's time for everyone to roll up their sleeves and get involved, because it's only getting hotter and we can do something about it. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Osprey, and wishing you a wonderful, wonderful summit.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to thank, my goodness, Osprey Oreo Lake, who's the founder and executive director of the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, WeCan, for being such a great show. And special thank you to Megan Can, and also to Nicole. Oh, my goodness. I want to thank Nicole Warwick and Megan Kahn for being such wonderful, wonderful guests. A reminder, tell your friends Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. this evening. I'm so excited I get to listen to my own program. Also, I am available for speaking engagements. And if you have an announcement, you want or like, you know, happy birthday, an anniversary, or anything like that, please, please email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. Remember, our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that. And also, get involved. You know, if you go on the website, www.womenspaces.com, you'll see the information on the weekend. You'll see the information on the daily acts and also on the conservation, that you can get all the information that you need and perhaps support these groups. I mean, it's a wonderful time that we're living in. And I want to thank all my listeners out there for listening. And to remind you once again, the children are our future. They need to live in a clean environment, a clean, sustainable environment. Looking forward to being with you the next time.
She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life, the woman in your life, the woman in your life is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, September 10th, 2018.